spins a web any size. Catch your seeds just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud. He's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there, there goes the Spider-Man.
Special.
Stop moving that thing.
Your mom needs to stop moving.
You were doing that a lot on the last episode. I could hear it doing this a lot.
It makes the listeners feel like they're a part of everything. Hey, welcome to a minisode of the Psychotronic Film Society. I'm one of your hosts, Gary Horn.
Hey guys, co-host Justin Bishop. What are we talking about, Gary? Why are we doing a minisode?
Well, we just both went to see Spider-Man Homecoming, directed by John Watts.
Written by an army of screenwriters.
I was waiting to see if you knew all the names, because nope. I was not even going to try.
There are six of them.
That's insane.
Including John Watts. He is one of them. Also, John Francis Daly, who is on Freaks and Geeks, but is now a screenwriter.
Nice. Yeah. Well, we decided that, what the hell? It's a good time to do a mini-sode, since, you know, it's a weird thing we always talk about, that these movies, Spider-Man, 30 years ago especially, would have fit right into a Psychotronic Hall of Fame kind of deal, and it still does. Technically, he fits all of the qualifications. Some dude gets bit by a spider and gets superpowers, and he's fighting a guy in a vulture suit terrorizing the city. And
sounds like a horror movie.
Yeah, it sounds like a movie that we should talk about anyway. It's just now those movies are the cool movies.
Now they're the biggest movies in the world.
Yeah, so that's kind of weird. But anyway, so we're still going to talk about it.
Yeah, why not? Because you want to know what we think.
Yeah.
Right?
Clearly, if you're listening to this, you give a shit.
Well, Gary, what did you think? You're a huge Spider-Man guy.
Yeah. Like, I think Spidey and Cap are like my favorite characters.
Yeah.
Like, Spider-Man for like the first part of my life was like the biggest thing in the world. I have so much Spider-Man shit. But then I think Cap, as I got older, was like he moved up in there.
Because he's an old man like you.
Yeah, exactly right. Although he appears in this film a little bit. I guess, are we starting off non-spoiler?
Yeah, I don't think that's a spoiler, though.
Yeah, I don't think it's much of a spoiler. And he's real lame.
He's great. I love him.
But
So if you guys have not seen the movie, we'll start off for the first few minutes spoiler free, and then we'll give you a good warning when we decide to talk about stuff that might spoil some of the scenes in the movie, so that you can listen to, you know, once you've seen it yourself.
So non-spoiler review. It's great. It's definitely worth seeing. I thought it was super funny, action-packed.
It is one of the funniest movies in the Marvel Universe at this point. Like, it's up there with Guardians of the Galaxy, I think, with being one of the funniest ones that they've done so far. And I think that's, at this point in the Marvel Universe, I think that's important, because with stuff like, especially culminating with Civil War, things have gotten pretty dark and dire in the Marvel Universe. And those are still fun movies. There's still a lot of fun stuff. In fact, in Civil War, one of the most fun things about it is Spider-Man's appearance. But that movie ended on a very dark note, a very kind of a downer. And I think it's important to throw in a movie like this at this point in the timeline that reminds people of how fun they can also be.
Yeah, I think you're right. Everything about this movie definitely plays like a John Hughes teen comedy. And the casting is outstanding.
It is. Tom Holland, who plays Peter Parker, I was not familiar with before he got cast in Civil War. He's done quite a few movies prior to that, but I haven't seen any of them. So he was kind of an unknown commodity to me, and I loved him in that one, and I love him even more in this. I think he is everything that you want Peter Parker to be. Like, I feel like in previous Spider-Man movies, Peter Parker has been a little too cool, especially in the Andrew Garfield version.
Yeah, he was like skater bro.
Yeah, that's not Peter Parker is a dork. Yeah. You know, and he's supposed to be a dork. Now, you have never met Tom Holland's Spider-Man pre-Spider-Bite. That's happened before any of these movies began, which I think is also great because do we need to fucking see that again?
No, nobody needs to see that again.
They literally mention it in passing at one point in this film, but it's not shown in any flashbacks or anything. Like, you know who Spider-Man is, and the filmmakers know that you know who Spider-Man is. So you never see him at his dorkiest. You never see him with glasses.
Right.
You know, but he's still, you know, even though he's been being Spider-Man for a while at the time that this movie starts, he's still sort of a fuck up, both as a human, as because he's 15 years old and all 15 year olds are idiots, even when they're geniuses. And also he's kind of a fuck up as Spider-Man.
Yeah, I love that about it, though.
He's very bad at being a superhero.
Yeah, and I guess that makes sense. Like, you can't just jump in and be awesome at saving lives. I mean,
right?
You know, he's done some great stuff, but he still is. He makes mistakes, and that's kind of cool to see.
He makes a lot. Like, you literally see him fall on his face several times in the movie,
right.
And there are some big disasters that happen in the film that would not have happened had he not gotten involved. Like, there are some things some bad situations where he has to save people that he's the one who essentially caused them to happen to begin with. You know?
Yeah, that's an interesting take on him.
But that's a big part of the movie, though, because a big part of the movie is him wanting to be an Avenger and Tony Stark saying, you're not ready. And then you constantly show that, no, he's not ready.
Yeah, and I love that about it because that's a cool way to go, considering part of what is Spider-Man's charm is that Peter's always having to struggle with issues kind of like that. I think that might be a little bit unique to the from the comics. He's having to struggle with becoming a hero to join the Avengers, which is not actually really crazy because when he first debuted, he wanted to join like the Fantastic Four.
Right.
But he's always a character who is struggling with internal conflict, and I love they even keep that here with like his teenage problems and dealing with that sort of thing. So
One of the big conflicts of the movie is him being on a debate team and trying to be there for his teammates, and not to mention that the girl who is the captain of the debate team is also the girl who he has a crush on. So it's a lot of that John Hughes movie vibe that you were talking about, which I like. And a lot of the Marvel movies do that, especially later ones. Like, I think, you know, the first Captain America is a very much like a old school kind of rollicking adventure movie, and then Winter Soldier is like a 70s spy conspiracy movie. I like that Marvel is doing that with their films, and they're saying that this doesn't have to be just a superhero movie. It can also be, you know, it can be a 70s conspiracy thriller, or it can be a John Hughes like high school comedy,
which is always the thing. Like, I hear about superhero fatigue, but I think Marvel, I don't know, that's always my argument for Marvel too, is that they're never even the same movie.
Like, they're not, and I don't get that argument, because yes, they visually, they're all very similar. Mm-hmm. I agree with that, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think if you want them all to exist in the same universe, then you need to make them visually similar. Some people say that, oh, well, the directors don't get to put their visual stamp on it. Well, that's not the type of movie that they're making. That's not the type of movie they were hired to make.
Right.
You know, so they're hired to make a movie that, yes, stands alone, but also works as part of a bigger whole. And so it has to look like a piece of that same puzzle. And if it looked all over-stylized, I think that's why the Edgar Wright Ant-Man thing didn't work out. Because Edgar Wright has a very distinct visual style. And I would love to have seen an Edgar Wright Ant-Man movie, but it most likely would have been an Edgar Wright movie and not felt like it was part of the overall Marvel universe. Or it would have felt like it was part of the Marvel universe, and then it would have been like, well, why bother getting Edgar Wright?
I'd like to think that it was like an amicable split between the two of them, that
they just decided it wasn't a good fit.
So I respect Edgar Wright as a filmmaker, and he should be doing his own thing. But I also respect that Marvel, it's their job to keep this stuff.
And honestly, I just saw Baby Driver, and I would much rather have that than Edgar Wright's version of Ant-Man, because that's what that departure allowed him to go make Baby Driver, and I'd rather have him do an original content.
Yeah. Michael Keaton is amazing.
Yeah, I was about to get to that because you mentioned the casting. He plays Vulture. They don't ever call him Vulture, Adrian Toomes. And one thing this movie does really cool is it starts off at the end of the first Avengers movie, where they're cleaning up the Chitauri invasion, and he works for the cleanup crew, basically, and then essentially gets fired by a new group that comes in that is owned by Tony Stark, which I think that that's the same group that they're going to be making a new TV show about. Because there's like a new TV show that's going to be like a Marvel Universe comedy, but about the cleanup crew. So that's what sort of spurs his move into supervillainy. But I think he's honestly, I think he's one of the best villains Marvel has done so far, because Marvel has always sort of had a villain problem. Like, their villains are never nearly as interesting as their heroes, with the exception, I would say, of Loki. I think Loki is way up there. I think Loki's their best villain.
He's been the most well-rounded and had story.
Yeah, he's not one-dimensional. And Tombs, you find out throughout the movie, is not necessarily just a one-dimensional bad guy, which we might get more into that in our spoiler section. But he's got motivation for what he's doing, and it's not just because he wants to be evil. You know? And plus, Michael Keaton is a total badass.
Yeah, it's just these roles that you realize just how good he is, that given his job, like at a guy like him taking this job, that he's not center stage. I mean, he's still got a significant role in the film, but
yeah,
he makes this character of the Vulture, which I've read the comics my whole life, and the Vulture ain't shit.
Yeah, he's just a weird looking old guy.
Yeah, he's, I mean, he's all right, you know, but now the Vulture is one of the best villains that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has.
Right.
I think everything about this movie keeps the heart of Spider-Man alive, possibly better than any of the other movies have. I think that he is back in his rightful place, too, as potentially becoming the heart of the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe, mm-hmm. which I think is cool, because seeing this kid grow into the role, you could see, like, 10 years down the road that he's, like, the veteran Captain America style guy.
Right.
And, like, all these new guys are coming along.
Vulture's also got a pretty cool group of kind of cronies. He's got Bokeem Woodbine. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he blew everyone away in season 2 of Fargo. He's one of the guys, and of course, poor man's Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
That's Logan Marshall Green, for those of you who have not listened to our Prometheus episode. And plus, there are some really fun actors, comedians in smaller roles. You've got Martin Starr in there. You've got Hannibal Buress. You've got Donald Glover. And none of these are spoilers, because these were all announced a long time ago. I remember hearing these names come out in the casting, but I sort of completely forgot until I saw them in the movie. I was like, I remember talking about that. Especially Donald Glover, who, of course, a couple years ago, there was the whole Donald Glover for Spider-Man campaign on Twitter and stuff. So it was kind of cool to see him in a role.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the last we've seen of that character. And I'll get into that in our spoiler
section.
Yeah,
I was about to say, I don't think it is either. I think he'll probably... Actually, to be honest with you, what's cool about all of those roles is they're all people that can show back up.
Oh, yeah. And
the school roles.
Yeah, as well as Michael Mando's character, Michael Mando has a very small role in this. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's on Orphan Black, and he plays Nacho on Better Call Saul. I think he's an awesome actor, but he's really, he's got a very small role in this, but I think that his is also a character who we'll see later on, and I'll explain why later on in our spoiler section. I also like that, and I don't consider this as a spoiler because it doesn't matter one bit to the rest of the movie, but Kenneth Choi shows up as the principal. And I was like, that's weird that they cast this, because he's in Captain America, the first one, as part of the Howling Commandos. I was like, that's weird that they put him in this. And then there's a scene where you see him in the principal's office, and you see an old World War II photo, which has him in it, behind him on his desk, and like some medals, some war medals, and you put two and two together that this must be his grandson.
Yeah.
Or you know, it's fun. It's a fun little nod to the rest of the Marvel Universe.
It really is. So I guess, I mean, do you have anything else you want to cover in the non-spoiler section? So my opinion is I want to rewatch Spider-Man 2. I haven't rewatched them in a long time. But I remember Spider-Man 2, Raimi version, being one of the best superhero movies I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
So in my brain right now, I'm not ready to say this is better than that, but I think that it is better than most of the other ones, if not all of them.
I'd be with you on that. I think Spider-Man 2 is really great. I think this one might capture the spirit of the character a little bit better.
Oh, yeah. Well, I feel like Tom Holland is perfect.
Yeah.
like, he's perfect for the role, so I have no issue with him whatsoever. Yeah. And I think, personally, is the best guy for the role that's played him so far.
Yeah, I agree. I think this, I really like this as a movie, as part of the whole Marvel universe, but I think it does stand alone really well.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to have seen the rest of the Marvel movies to even enjoy this one. Now, you might not get some of the Tony Stark stuff or some of the cleanup stuff at the beginning, but it stands alone as a Spider-Man movie pretty well.
Right.
It's got a great cast of characters. You've got, you know, obviously Tom Holland, all those villains that I mentioned, but also I love the kid who plays Ned, who's his, like, buddy.
Yeah.
Who I don't think is in the comics. I know that...
I don't know him.
Miles Morales has a friend who's very similar in that he's a chubby Asian guy who honestly acts a lot like this guy, where he's very excited that his best friend is Spider-Man,
right?
You know, and has a very hard time keeping that in. So I think they might have sort of taken that character and turned him into this character.
Gotcha.
But it's a great film. It's fun. It's hilarious. It's one of my favorite recent Marvel movies. It's one of the most, like, comic book fun Marvel movies that they've done so far.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key. It's really fun.
It's really fun. More fun than most of the MCU movies, apart from probably the Guardians movies, but those sort of feel like they're disconnected from the rest of this a little bit.
Yeah.
So this feels a little bit more part of the main Marvel universe. So exactly. I'm excited to see where they go. When you guys go see it, as always with these Marvel movies, stick through the credits all the way to the end.
Oh, yeah. There's two that we can vouch for.
Yeah. So, you ready to get into spoilers?
Let's talk about spoilers.
So okay.
Better stop now if you're not interested in hearing that for some reason.
All right. You've been warned.
So, Spider-Man dies. Like, what the fuck? What do you do now?
What do you do now? I guess Miles has to come in.
And the Earth blew up. So, that's it, right? No more Marvel movies.
Listen, that did not stop the Planet of the Apes franchise from going forward.
Okay.
And I believe the second Planet of the Apes film, they literally blow up the entire planet. I don't know if you've ever seen those sequels. I'm sorry if that's a spoiler, but they're 50 years old.
I can't complain.
They literally, at the end of one of those movies, via nuclear detonation, blow up the planet, and then they still made like three more movies after that.
Good to know.
So anyway, seriously though, like, what do we want to get into on spoilers so far? Let's talk about the villain. So there's a reveal towards the end of the film that Toomes is, in fact, the father of Liz, who's the girl that Peter's had a crush on the whole film. And, in fact, he finds out when he goes to pick Liz up for the homecoming dance.
Yeah.
I did not see that coming from a mile away.
Me either.
Like, I had no idea. I knew that there was something going on with Toomes' family because they kept sort of making mention of it but not showing them. So I thought maybe he had a wife that had cancer and was dying or something, and he was doing this, like, pay for her treatment, which would have been pretty good, I gotta say.
Yeah.
But, and it would have made him more sympathetic. But I think linking his family life into Peter's personal life made the stakes a little bit higher for Peter at the end, because it's like on multiple levels there's things going on.
It's a really great scene where Toomes figures out that Peter is Spider-Man.
You can, like, slowly see it on his face and in Michael Keaton's performance that he's... At first, he just recognizes his voice, and then, like, he starts to hear little bits of, like, Peter going missing in certain places where Spider-Man showed up and figures it out.
He's got a lot of depth to him, this character, and like I was saying earlier, the Vulture, you know, whatever before, but...
Right.
Keaton gives it so much life, and, like, he is a favorite character now for me, and... I just love watching the guy work.
He's such a great actor.
Yeah, and that scene, I mean, is tense, where he's telling him he's going to kill his whole family.
And Tom Holland plays it really well, too, because he can sort of see that he is figuring stuff out. You can see him getting scared. And then the scene after that, where they're in Toomes' house, and he knows, and Tom Holland is sort of catatonic, right. Peter Parker... is both at the same time kind of scary and sort of funny. That's hard to do, being scary and funny at the same time.
Yeah. I also love, since we're talking spoilers, that one of the end caps of the movie is Tombs in prison, so he survives this whole thing.
He does, which you don't normally get in these movies. It's usually the villain's dead.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Marvel's been pretty good about that. I mean, decently good.
For the most part.
You know, Loki's still kicking. Right. Red Skull disappeared, sort of. You know, there's always the potential.
Yeah.
And
what happened to Shocker? Did he die?
I don't think Shocker died. I don't think he did either. Out. Because another thing I would say... Well, first
second,
of all,
second Shocker, I should say.
Yeah, second Shocker.
That's Bokeem Woodbine's character.
To finish the thought on Vulture, what I was going to say is that it was just cool seeing him get confronted by Max Gargan, I think is his last name.
Mac Gargan.
Gargan, yeah. Sorry, couldn't remember. But I know that he's...
And that's Michael Mando's character, who I mentioned from Better Call Saul.
And he will be the Scorpion.
Right, right. And now he's got... a reason to hate Spider-Man, and he has also got contact with the guy who knows who Spider-Man's real identity is.
Yeah.
But which is really going to up the stakes later on.
It is, but it's interesting that Adrian Toomes says if I knew who he was, he'd already be dead.
Mm-hmm. But then he gets a little smile on his face.
Yeah, but it's weird. It's like, what's his game now? So that's a
unless he's
going
to sell the... You know, or just play the market. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, because he's a guy who obviously has a nose for business.
Yeah. So it's an interesting concept. Now, in regards to Bokeem Woodbine and the Shocker, I like that idea. I actually like the idea. I think what would be really cool for him is if that he shows up all the time in these movies.
Yeah.
Like just with run-ins with Spider-Man.
Right.
But his tech gets better. Like, he keeps building that suit
that
or something.
Cool.
You know,
yeah.
It'd just be neat to have, like, a little side villain that Spider-Man keeps having to deal with.
Yeah, like Rhino or somebody, right. Like he does in the comics, you know. It's like, oh, I got Rhino's running his face through a bank again.
Yeah, exactly.
Was Rhino in one of the Andrew Garfield movies? Oh, no, yeah, it's Paul Giamatti.
That's right.
It's at the beginning.
Oh, at the beginning.
Of part two.
Yeah, you're right.
That's what it is. So, anyway... how did you like Flash Thompson?
So my understanding of Flash, here's the thing. You can tell that the movie's going for diversity, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't know why I brought that up, except it's just, you know, Flash has steady been a white jock, straight male buff dude, you know?
Right, and this guy is Tony Revolori is his name, who is in, I've only ever seen him in one movie, and that's the Grand Budapest Hotel. So, which he's outstanding in. And he's good here. He's really good here. I think he's hilarious. It's not the typical what you think of as Flash Thompson, and not because he's not white. I don't give a shit about that. But he's not like a big buff. Like
he's not like the quarterback.
He's on the fucking debate team.
Yeah.
But also, the school that they go to in this is like some sort of charter school for like super smart kids.
Yeah, he's like a rival nerd, not the jock.
Exactly.
That hates the nerds.
But he's still a douche.
Yeah,
he still wears a pop collar, and he's an asshole.
He's a DJ,
DJ Flash.
Flash Thompson.
But he gets some of the best laughs in the movie.
Yeah,
I think the actor is outstanding. It was just not quite what we've seen from Flash Thompson in the comics and stuff, but he still plays the same role. He's still a bully.
There's some things about this movie that they're turning on its head, you know, for it being in... You know, being back at home with Marvel, as much as you'd think they'd stick with the regular story, there are some things like...
Well, his Liz is his love interest in this, who I don't think is in the comics. But if she is, then I don't know who she is in the comics.
Okay, so I was confused by that because there is a girl in the comics, Liz Allen.
Uh-huh.
Does it list her as Liz Toomes in this movie?
Just Liz.
Just Liz.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering if it's supposed to be a mashup of that. There is a girl in the comics named Liz Allen, but that character is there. I don't know if this Liz is supposed to be.
I don't think it is.
Yeah, it doesn't. There's the relationship to Toomes, like the last name doesn't
but
match
it's
up.
Interesting that they chose basically a new character and not Gwen Stacy or Mary Jane as his love interest. I mean, Gwen Stacy's not in this at all, which I think is odd, but also... They're trying to distance themselves from the previous films.
I can see them wanting to step lightly into that territory. I still hope that they end up keeping that storyline because I think that's a big part of who Spider-Man becomes.
I think so, too. I think they need to do it later on.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Mary Jane.
Yeah. So that's
there's
a
character
one.
Named Michelle in this, played by Zendaya, who I am not familiar with, but I remember when she got cast and it was a big deal because she is very big with the Disney Channel crowd.
Yeah, we're too old to know.
And I had never heard of her. She is great in this film.
We have a point where, I mean, a joke in the film is that how could you be attracted to Spider-Man? He's probably like 30.
Right. Yeah. So it was like,
clearly we're out of.
I'm well past. But she's really funny in this. She's one of my favorite of the side characters. I think she's hilarious.
Yeah, she's great.
But then there's this moment at the end where she goes, my friends call me MJ. And I made that same like groaning sound, I think, that I made when Joseph Gordon-Levitt says that his middle name is Robin at the end of The Dark Knight Rises. Because it's like, really? Like, yeah, why?
That's weird. Like, see,
I don't care that she's MJ. Like,
yeah, I was about to say, if she'd been cast as Mary Jane, right, then fine.
I remember people on the internet, there were like rumors that either her or the other girl were being cast as Mary Jane, and they're like, they were being just fucking racist, basically, because they not by outright saying it, but going, well, Mary Jane has to be a white girl with red hair. Well, who the fuck cares?
We can count on comics fans to be really sticklers for, you know, the story and caring a lot about the product and being racist when it's time.
Right, exactly. It's weird to me because she, for one thing, her name is not Mary Jane. Her name is Michelle. So, MJ stands for Mary Jane. That's a weird thing for them to do just for the sake of that little tag on the end.
Exactly.
Why not just make her Mary Jane the whole time?
Yeah,
I don't know why.
I was wondering to myself, it's like, well, now are they changing Mary Jane?
Yeah.
Or is she going to be Michelle Mary Jane Watson?
Right.
Or it's like, you know, that's a weird thing. I don't get what they're...
I don't know what the point was other than to throw that little thing, that little treat into the fans at the end.
Because we didn't need it. It doesn't add
anything to the story. Just make her Mary Jane the whole time. And then, honestly, it would make an interesting dynamic for the audience because you know who that is, even though... But it's also a completely different type of character because Mary Jane is very much like a very popular, everyone wants to date Mary Jane Watson in the comics. But in here, she's sort of an outcast, weird kid.
You know? I could buy if she evolves as well.
Like, right.
That, you know, I think it's kind of cool that she shows some heart and is like an activist and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Like, I'm not totally against that idea and that maybe later she spruces up and becomes like a popular girl. She's a wild child on the comics, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Gwen is the straight-laced. The preppy, yeah. And so Mary Jane was always kind of the, you know, crazy one. But I think she would be great as Mary Jane. It's just...
Yeah, yeah. It's not anything to do with the casting. It was just a silly twist that wasn't necessary.
Yeah.
So...
let's see. What else?
One other fun little thing that I really like the way that they evolved Spider-Man's suit throughout the film because I think as a filmmaking technique, it's really smart. So he's got this new suit from that Tony Stark has built for him, which gives him a lot of options for all of his different like webs and stuff. And it sort of explains it in a way that was never really explained in the comics.
Which, right.
And honestly, it's something that has in later comics as Peter's gotten older and now in the comics, he has Peter Parker Industries and he's basically Tony Stark.
I think that's
and
great.
He's created all that stuff, but this allows him to have some of those gadgets early on. But it also, once the training wheels are taken off and he's got the full access, he's got basically a version of Jarvis mm-hmm. That...
Played by Jennifer Connelly.
Who is married to Paul Bettany,
nice.
Who played Jarvis, which I thought was... I don't know if they did that on purpose, but I like it.
Yeah.
I like that Karen and Jarvis are married in real life. And... but because he hacked the suit and doesn't know really how to use it, and so he's having to learn and she's having to explain, it's funny. So it's entertaining, but it also is explaining a lot of stuff to the audience about how the suit works so that you don't have to wonder.
So
it's pretty clever.
It is clever. This is one of the things I was thinking of, though, when I was talking about things being turned on their heads a little bit in the lore of Spider-Man, is that he's got this very tech... savvy suit it's kind of weird for the character but
the character originally started in the 60s when that would have been kind of strange and
now
not only is he starting in 2017 but he's starting in a world where the Avengers already exist and Iron Man already exists.
I kept this close to my chest and the only thing that concerned me about the suit was that great, it makes sense that Tony Stark would help him out. It makes sense that Tony Stark would help out anybody on the Avengers, you know, like with their stuff. I didn't want it to take away because one thing I missed out on, like with in the originals, with like Peter having organic webbing, or you know, it never Peter Parker in the comics universe is one of the smartest characters.
Right.
Like, he always has been. If he wasn't Spider-Man, he'd still probably be somewhere because he's a genius.
Right, right.
And I love that they cover that here.
Mm-hmm. Because there's you see moments. Him making his own webbing in yeah. chemistry class. Like, he's,
and he's like mixing like web fluid 3.0 yeah. and stuff. So you're like, all right, I he's still smart.
Yeah.
He's obviously a
Tony Stark just upgraded what he was already doing.
Yeah.
Because he's a billionaire and has the resources to do so.
Right.
And Peter is, you know, a poor kid living in Queens with his aunt, who I love, Marissa Tomei, and I love that they make several references to how hot she is.
Yeah, because she is.
Because she is. And you can't cast Marissa Tomei as like an older, like, aunt, you know, a paternal character and not also be like, yeah, but she's also pretty hot.
Yeah, it's kind of neat though. That's kind of neat thing too. The younger, like, cooler Aunt
yeah,
May.
And I mean, and if he's 15 years old, like, it's completely plausible for her to be a guardian figure for him. So Gary, let's wrap it up. You have any final thoughts?
No.
Anything we didn't, just anything we didn't cover?
I'm trying to think of anything that we missed. I love that there's we said we would cover this, but we didn't.
Donald Glover.
Yeah, were you going to go back to there with the Prowler?
No. I was thinking, here was my thought, was that he mentions at one point that his nephew lives in that neighborhood. I'm thinking his nephew might be Miles.
In the Spider-Man comics, the Ultimate Spider-Man comics.
Brian Michael Bendis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Donald Glover's character's name, who escapes me right now, is a character called the Prowler.
Okay.
And his nephew is Miles Morales.
Oh, okay. I don't think I realized that they were. Okay. Well, that makes sense then. So both of our theories.
So you're dead on.
Work
yeah.
together.
Yeah. He's a character called the Prowler.
And, Aaron Davis.
Aaron Davis. Yeah. That's the name. That's the secret identity of the Prowler.
Okay.
And he is the uncle of Miles Morales. So,
nice.
So, yeah, so you're right.
Okay.
I think his nephew is Miles, and so that leaves it open for that to
yeah, pop so, back up. And Tom Holland's young enough. You know, some of these guys, Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. stuff, they're not going to be doing this for a whole lot longer. I don't know if any of them will do it after Infinity War.
Right.
Who knows?
They could all
so
die.
Yeah, so they're going to have to – I mean, Chris Evans is pushing 40, and Robert Downey's 50. They're in much better shape than I will be at that age, but they're right. still, you know – aren't going to want to be superheroes in their 60s. So at some point, they're going to have to recast or restructure things, like maybe have Bucky become Cap at some point or something like that. You know, they're going to have to do something. Tom Holland, of course, he's playing a 15-year-old. He's like 21 in real life right now, but he's still much younger than any of them were when they started, and he has a lot of more staying power as far as how long he can do this. But they could even bring Miles in and a few years and then have a spinoff and have Miles Morales Spider-Man movies and Peter Parker Spider-Man movies happening.
I'm game.
You know?
That's all good.
Like, I mean, just like the comics. Like, there are two different versions of Spider-Man in the comics in the same universe right now.
So. Right. That's cool. So there's the Tinkerer was also another villain. We didn't mention that. But
yeah, he's fun. I don't know that actor's name. I could pull it up, but I know him from Orange is the New Black.
He plays just another like side little
yeah,
snippet,
it's fun.
Little yeah,
and I like him
Easter
in it.
Egg. But
yeah, there's a lot of great stuff to like about this movie. I think it's. I was worried about how the Sony Marvel thing was going to work, but I think it definitely feels at home in the Marvel universe. I'm still very worried about like the Venom movies that they're going to do that are not going to be part of the MCU, but still connected to this somehow. I think that's very strange.
And I don't know why they're bothering.
I don't
like,
either.
Just fucking let it go. Like, yeah.
Do you know how much money this movie is going to make for you guys? Because the details about their agreement came out recently, and Sony's getting all the box office on this.
Yeah.
And so they basically gave the rights to Marvel for Marvel to do everything creatively. Sony's making all the box office. Now, Marvel gets merchandising, which is they're going to be fine. They're going to come out on ahead. But Sony's still going to make $1 billion off of this movie.
It just eats me up because I'm thinking to myself, like, one of the problems like a lot of these franchises have is, you know, it's not that Marvel is God, but Marvel cares about the quality of their characters.
Right.
They care because they own
these are their
them.
Babies.
These are their babies. Yeah. And so everybody else that tries has never quite...
They fuck it up.
Yeah.
They eventually. They might do okay at first, but eventually they will fuck it up. And it's because they're trying too hard to pull in like fan favorite things like Venom, who I don't think Venom's a character who can carry his own movie. No. I just don't. I think he's an okay villain if used correctly. We haven't seen him used correctly on film yet, but he could be.
I just don't understand the idea of trying to run it without Spider-Man. Why don't you just
wait a few years down the line after Tom Holland's got two or three of these movies in, and then do a movie where he finds the symbiote and he's running around as the black suited Spider-Man.
That's what's cool about Venom.
Then you know that Venom's coming, and maybe Venom shows up at the end of that or comes in the next movie as the villain, you know?
Yeah.
Like, have a whole movie to build it up.
Exactly.
You know? And the symbiote thing, if Scorpion's going to come in, that's going to come into this universe anyway, because Scorpion eventually wears the symbiote.
So does Flash Thompson, really?
Yeah. So you've got the potential there. It's just be patient.
Yeah.
Like Cap says.
Which is possibly the greatest end cap on a movie
at all. It's hilarious. Got it. So good. Anyway, that's our thoughts on Spider-Man Homecoming.
Let us know what you think.
Yeah. You can find us at Psychotronic Pod on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/psychotronicpod. We're on Tumblr. We're on Instagram. Gary's on Instagram. Gary's on Twitter.
Yeah, at Rock and Roll Gary, all spelled out.
And I'm at Justin_Bishop. Rate, review, like us on iTunes, share us with your friends.
And I assume this episode is going to go up before our next regular episode.
It will.
So come back on Wednesday when Faces of Death, episode 35.
Yeah, something like 34, somewhere in
there. We don't even know. The next episode. Come back and visit us for Faces of Death.
Yes.
I'm going to get another beer between now and then.
Probably a good idea.
Until next time, may the wings of liberty never lose a feather.
Here's to swimming with bow-legged women.